the message of the cross. Hey, it's not an easy one, but nobody said it ever would be. In fact, we're going to be talking about the difficulty of that in an interview with Dr. Yvette Hovsepian-Pierce. This is Father Voskin. I'm a priest of the Armenian Church, connecting the dots between the emotional, the spiritual, the psychological, and everything in between. This is episode number 465 of The Next Step, and I'm inviting you to take it with us right now.
Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes, welcoming you to our ninth year of broadcasting The Next Step. The Next Step is a step, a stride, moving us forward. Here, Father Voskin provides his unique and distinctive voice for Armenian Orthodoxy, giving an intelligent and practical answer to the challenges of life, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by Jesus Christ. It's a practical approach to melding spirit and passion in the real world. The Next Steps are serious, fun, informative, and most of all relevant, as religion should be. So get ready. We're taking the next step.
I am America. Say it like you mean it, huh? I am America. It's stuck in my head. I can't get it out. Just got back from a prayer breakfast at the Getty House with the Los Angeles mayor, Rick Garcetti. Yes, we name drop whenever we can. Anyway, we had an opportunity to be together with a bunch of clergy from not only Christian denominations, but also just a group of people from different faith backgrounds. And we were treated to a beautiful song, I Am America. And I can't describe it. I wish I could get you the words. I could write them down, but I'm not quick enough. So what I'll do is I'll put a link on today's show notes. Do check it out. We had a chance to listen to these people sing, perform, and really become part of the participation. So happy National Day of Prayer. And I believe that that's an American tradition, right? It's here in America. And I know that everybody politicizes it. Interesting, right? Because it's supposed to be, you know, separation of church and state, but it's the state that calls it the National Day of Prayer, and it's the cities, the states, and of course in America, Washington, D.C., you have the president at his level getting up and calling it National Day of Prayer. And there's so many dimensions to it. I've spoken about this in the past, especially when I stopped going to the prayer breakfast held in Glendale, California, and it was horrible because they selected Ken Starr to be the speaker. I'll never forget that. It was supposed to be a National Day of Prayer, and in Glendale, the mayor had invited us to go, all clergy from different denominations, different faith backgrounds, to go and participate in this. And we get there, and lo and behold, and it's Ken Starr, the speaker. What? I mean, there's nobody to talk about on National Day of Prayer than this man who's hunted down Bill Clinton and getting into the politics and everything. And so I stopped going to the Glendale one. Today I had to go because I was asked to go and represent the primate. And it was interesting. It's not my forte. It's not my cup of tea, so to speak. But I guess there is value in networking. We met some really great people. Had a chance to meet the Episcopal priest. And she was from South Africa. And we got a chance to compare notes, talk about different issues. And so in that respect, it was nice to be with the faith community. Anyway, happy day of prayer. From there, I ran over to the diocese where I gave a presentation on social media and how to make it effective, how to use it effectively in the church. But the biggest buzz all week long has been following our meeting with the Lakota tribes, where we celebrated a day of solidarity between the Armenians and the Native Americans. And there were so many dimensions to this gathering. It was last weekend. I'll have a link on today's show notes, because today we have Yvette Hovsepian-Pierce. She's going to be speaking in a few minutes. We're going to have an interview, and we wanted to remember a few weeks ago we had her on, and so many of you reacted, and I wanted to bring her back on. She's going to be heading out to Germany. Before she heads out, I wanted to put her into the studio and ask her a few questions and get her to talk about some of the issues. So that's what today's show is going to be. But I do want to come back to the gathering, the solidarity that we had with the Native Americans and the Armenians, about how it all panned out. What does it mean to be in issues? Remember, we talked about that last week as well. So lots to talk about. And I'm very blessed because we never seem to run out of issues and topics to talk about. And so I'm going to just throw that out right now. We're not in that form. There'll be links on today's show notes. Do check it out. You can watch the entire conference, actually, the 2 days. They are, thanks to our friends over at Los Angeles Rallies in March, they videoed it. They streamed it. They streamed the 2 days of celebration. So you can see the different music, the different cultures being highlighted. You can hear the talks, the panel discussion. That's all there. So do check out today's show notes. So as I mentioned today, Dr. Yvette Hovsepian-Birs is our guest. She's going to be talking about a lot of things, especially about the message of the cross. And I think that this is a valuable one as we get ready for so many different projects coming up. I think it's good to start at a base. So with that, let me transition right now. A couple days ago, we had Dr. Hovsepian-Birs in the studio. Here's that conversation. We're going to do a second session today with Yvette Hovsepian-Birs. She's worked with refugees, and you were with us a few weeks ago where you talked more about the refugees. Right now, we just finished April 24th. We're still in that mode, you know. Last week, you gave this beautiful homily at our church service, and that was just really caught everybody off guard, especially when you did that visual with the shoes and the ties. First of all, welcome. I'm glad you're here today. You gave a beautiful homily the other day. Can you tell me a little bit about your experience? What led up to that? I know that you had come, you were in prayer, and you had discussed this with your husband about an American view towards that. I'd love to hear that. I'd love to hear some of the experiences.
So my husband, Greg, who used to be a pastor and a chaplain in the armed forces, he and I were having conversation in the morning during our morning coffee. And I asked him, and I said, Greg, you know, as an American, why is, from your perspectives, why is Armenian Genocide Remembrance Day, April 24th, so significant to me as an Armenian? Mm-hmm. And he looked at me in a semi-frustrated way, and he said, Yvette, I'm just going to remind you of the same thing your mama told you about your Armenian faith. Get out of your bubble. Get out of your, you know, Christian thinking or your Armenian thinking, and be realistic about what this day means to you, and not just you, but to me, as an American who's married to you, or to the rest of Americans, or to other non-Armenians, that the Armenian genocide, April 24th, the Remembrance Day, is about human rights. It's directly connected to respect for humanity, preserving human rights. And it goes back to our Human Rights Declaration and the commitments that we have, how we're going to honor the rights of other humans, and we're not going to wipe away a race because they belong to a certain race, or we're going to get rid of a whole, you know, number of human beings because they come from certain color or religion.
So, in a sense, the Armenian genocide story and what's happened in is giving us the metaphor, is giving us the language to talk about mm-hmm. some of the bigger issues, which
absolutely.
Is where you find yourself in.
Yes.
And doing those bigger
yes.
issues. And I know last time you shared with us that the reasons why you were engaged in refugee relief, but how about the rest of us? I mean, you saw what happened in Los Angeles, mm-hmm. one of the largest
yes.
areas of Armenian concentration. We certainly know what happens every year in Armenia. You have a nonstop flow of people going mm-hmm. to Dzidzernagapet, dropping that flower. And it's this respect that we have towards the past. But we can't seem to get past the past.
You know,
I
respect all of this.
Uh-huh.
I respect the commitment of Armenians.
Yes.
And even those who are non-Armenians that join Armenians on April 24th, go out there and march and let their voices be heard. But I always question, what about April 23rd or April 25th or the rest of 364 days?
Right.
What about those? And in our march, when we're marching, what are we saying? Are we just throwing out political slogans? Are we just throwing out words that display anger and hatred, and words and thoughts that just reflect on a crime of the past? Or are we also speaking words of faith, words of vision, words of future, hope and life? Our Armenian ancestors, like I said last Monday, the reason they endured so much atrocity, mm-hmm. death, murder, slaughter, humanity, is because they were visionary people, because they had the message of cross embedded in their hearts mm-hmm. and their souls. They upheld that hope. They thought, I am just sometimes thinking, when they brought them and they lined up those men against the walls to shoot them down, or they were raping our daughters and our mothers, or they were slaughtering our children or our fathers. What were the words and the thoughts that were going through their minds? And like I said, it was probably the message of cross mm-hmm. and that the hope that they had. That though I walk through the shadow of death, the valleys of death, I will not fear evil, for I know you are with me, O Lord. For I know there's future hope and life. For I know that you have given me promises that I will make you a great nation. I will give you future. So this is not my end. This is just my beginning.
And this, I think, reverberated when you said this Monday. I think this is where you hit everybody at a nerve that they could not escape. So why aren't we talking about this more? Why is this such, like, there's a person named Yvette who gets up at a church that Father Voskin is organized. It's kind of like secondhand. We're in a non-Armenian church. And this is where this message is given. Why is the rest of the world more excited about let's go and march and kill Turks?
Because it is more comfortable to live in that message. Because
comfort.
It's comfortable. You can sit at your desk and talk about it. Mm-hmm. It's actually fun to march down the street. There's so much adrenaline going on.
Yes.
At the end, you know, I mean, everyone is gathered together. There is some kind of a sense of unity. There's some kind of a sense of purpose and vision. And look, as human beings, we need to have purpose and vision.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like on that day, everybody has some kind of a purpose and vision. So there is this kind of like, you know, we feed this need that we have. But I think that at the end of the day, it's all about comfort. The more difficult part is to go out there and love a Turk who is suffering.
Wow.
The more difficult part of it is to get up and pack your bags and go to the borders of Turkey and love on those Syrian refugees that most of them or part of them may be even Armenians or Christians.
Wow.
The more difficult part of it is to go to Armenia and love a Yazidi. Love an Armenian who walked miles and went to Armenia, who are the descendants of our ancestors who endured genocide, and they were enduring another, genocide mm-hmm. by ISIS or by Assad or by other politicians, and they went back to Armenia, and we're thinking, Armenia, this Armenian land, but we're not thinking Arabs went to our country. Look at our American kids. Look at my son, who is 23, and I love him, and I am proud of him. He identifies himself as an Armenian-American Middle Easterner. But at the end of the day, he's an American kid. Mm. He first speaks English, and then he speaks some Armenian.
Which is, I think you made the point last time, was that why are we giving Armenian lessons to Armenians, right? Because they're not Armenian speaking.
This is the reality of Armenia. Look, Anush Dekmejian mm-hmm. brought up an amazing question after my March 14th talk on the refugee crisis, right? She asked a question. She said, Yvette, can you define seven different attitudes in Germany about refugees? And, how Germans perceived and what was their attitude? You broke them down into seven different groups. What about Armenia? Can you tell us how is the Armenian society? Is the entire society unified? Are there different attitudes toward these new refugees that have come to Armenia? Are the Armenians who were born there accepting these newcomers, or there's some resistance? As you may remember, to my shame and embarrassment, I didn't have an answer. Mm. I said, I am so sorry, I don't know. And that's why I told you afterwards, I went home and I told my husband, I'm not just going to Germany, I have to go to Armenia. Anush Dekmejian reminded me of something, that if I am truly in Armenia working with refugees, and I cannot answer, I don't know what is going on in Armenia, what are the challenges in that country, then what is my refugee work about?
Mm-hmm. Germany. And I know you work very closely with them, and last time you expressed the special connection that you have with Germany.
Sure.
And by the way, thank you for bringing the pastor from the German Methodist Church. He's an interesting guy, huh?
Kurt Poland. He loves to engage with Armenians.
He said he's going to be coming again to the Monday night. Why? Think about the Germans. Okay, they were the Holocaust. Okay, the Germans, mm-hmm. the Jews did something very interesting after the Holocaust. They separated Germans from Nazis. So we hate Nazis, but we love Germans. Germans are people, so it's okay to like Germans. Armenians have not done that. Armenians mm-hmm. have not separated Turks from, let's say, Ottomanism, okay? Mm-hmm. So we hate Ottomans, but we can like the Turk, you know? The Jews have been able to move us in that direction, to be able to say that there's Germans and there's Nazis. Nazis are inexcusable. We hate them. They're the worst of the worst. Germans are people. They're just like you and me. Now, these Germans have accepted a huge refugee.
1.1 million.
1.1 million in Germany itself.
Yes.
They've accepted this, almost feeling like this is their obligation as mm-hmm. humans. Mm-hmm. What is it in their culture that brings them, and what can we learn from them?
The very simple idea of learning from the past mm-hmm. and applying it to your now and your future. And my husband always reminds me of one thing. He says, Yvette, the means to success in the future is to let go of the past. You learn from your past, you apply the lessons, but then you always look forward to the future. And so that's what Germany did. That's what Angela Merkel did. Angela Merkel said, let's learn from our past. Mm-hmm. We committed atrocities during World War II. We killed human beings. We were not kind. We committed a Holocaust. We have an ugly history. But let's move beyond it. And let's learn from that. And let's show a different image to the world. Let's show the world that Germany is a new Germany. That is renewed. that past is not part of our present anymore. It is part of our history. We will never be able to wipe that history away. It is there as a good lesson for the rest of the generations in the world that do not repeat that again. But for us, in order to reaffirm what we have learned from our history, let's put our learning into action. Again, it's not to sit in your comfort zone, in your chair, behind a desk, or march one day a week, or a year, sorry. But it's to put what you have learned, your knowledge, mm-hmm. into action. And that's what she said. She said, we are going to embrace humanity in crisis. This is the Syrian refugee crisis, or 2015 refugee crisis, is known as the largest humanitarian crisis since World War II.
Right.
This is huge. 13.5 million Syrians are in need of humanitarian assistance. Over 6 million of them, and the numbers are growing, are displaced. Over 4 million of them are refugees. So that's what Germany did, said, okay, we are going to embrace them. We're going to show to the world that we are a gracious nation, that we can love, that we can nurture, and we can become a new Germany. We don't have to be that closed nationalist Germany, closed borders, but we can expand ourselves. We can stretch ourselves. And that's what God calls us to do, really. He calls us to stretch our fate.
Okay, so we're talking about Germany. You're talking about the Germans are open to it, and now you bring in God in this message that God is telling us. How much of religion, how much is, because I want to tie it in with what we talk about on this show, how much is faith involved in this? The people that are on the front line that are helping these refugees, how many of them are driven by faith issues? Mm-hmm. Is faith necessary, or do you find it just a humanitarian
effort? No, it's a humanitarian effort. Uh-huh. And for as we talked about it, you mm-hmm. know, Germany, I divided it into seven different groups. There were the secular
right.
views, and they were the religious
right.
groups. Okay, so they, you know, we need to take Germany realistically as what it is. It's a state of secular state. It's
right.
not a religious
and that's why
government.
I'm asking you this, because
yes.
you brought in God at that moment, and I'm wondering how much of the people on the front line, how much is the church? We met German Methodist pastor. Mm-hmm. How much is the church pushing from the behind?
Well, churches were actually at the front line.
Front line, okay.
When the refugees started coming, the churches were the first ones that opened up the doors. Classrooms were held in the churches. The church members started volunteering in the classroom. First responders. And they started going into the camps and helping out. They started, and these Germans, when I was talking to them, there was a German pastor in a small town. And this town accepted a lot of refugees proportionate to its residents. I mean, it was a huge number of refugees. And this German pastor, Pastor Poland, when I was talking to him, he said, Yvette, we need to look at Germany realistically, that we are a very close nation. You know, all we know is Germans. Yes, we have 3 million Turks in this country, but they have sort of like become part of Germany. It's like part of German identity. So we know we have Turks, but they're like dispersed, and it's not like they're part of our everyday lives, and they're not in very visible in most of the towns anyway. So we identify ourselves as just Germans. All we know is Germany. We're not like this melting pot like America. We don't understand this diversity, especially dealing with Arabs. We don't even know who they are. What are their traditions? We don't even speak their language. We don't understand them. And furthermore, we don't even understand Islam. He said, Christmas is coming, and I honestly don't know. Please help me, Yvette, understand. Do I put up a Christmas tree? or not? Because am I going to offend them? Because as pastors, as Christians, or as just human beings, as Germans, we're responding to our government's open arms, welcome culture. And we're saying, okay, we want to help humanity. And most of these humanity in crisis are Muslims.
How about that? Let's take a break for a couple moments right now. I'm sure you're finding this very interesting, and it gets even more interesting as she talks about the Muslims and about the Quranic Jesus, Jesus through the eyes of Islam. How about that? That's coming up in a couple moments. I thought it's a nice place to take a break, take a breather. Heavy-duty stuff, and you know, you need to balance it off. So we play a song of the day every week, something to just break up the interviews, break up the talk, but also to share some of God's creativity, some beautiful tunes that come from some very creative minds. Here's today's song. I hope you enjoy it.
Soft as the dawn, into the light, this child, innocent child, soft as this child is born, one small heart, one pair of eyes, one work of art. No. past the dawn into the light in awesome.
Not too many people who can do it like she does. That is Dottevig, of course. And that song, A Child is Born, off of the Ballads of From the Black Sea album. There'll be a link on today's show notes, not only to that song, not only to the album, but all of her great music. Just a very, very beautiful voice that takes you somewhere else, doesn't it? Did you enjoy it? Well, I hope you did. We're going to get back to Yvette's interview right now. And if you remember, she was talking about Muslims. And now she's going to share with us some ideas about the Quranic Jesus. Let's listen in.
And most of these humanity in crisis are Muslims. So how do we welcome them? Do we change our religion? Do we adapt a little bit? Maybe we don't talk too much about Jesus? And I told him, I said, Pastor Poland, you continue your message of faith. You continue your message of Christ. Mm-hmm. You continue your message of love. Because there is something called Quranic Jesus. Jesus is highly respected in Islam and in the Quranic doctrine.
And Mary too, right?
Yes, there is a surah called the Surah of Maryam. And there are 19 accounts of Christ in Jesus in the Quran. Mm-hmm. Okay, the accounts are different, but at least his story is being shared, and at least he's a respected prophet. So I give lectures on Quranic Jesus. So I said, no, you do whatever you are doing, because what attracts these Muslims to Christianity, the number one in a research that we did at Fuller Seminary was love. Christian love, just simple love. Just simple love. And that's what you said last Monday, and I really loved it. Because it's so aligned with the research that we did at Fuller Seminary with my professor, Dr. Dudley Woodbury, where we collected 850 questionnaires from Muslim background Christians. These were Muslims who had converted to Christianity. They had professed Christian faith. Now you can interpret conversion in any way you want.
Back up. I want to get it clear. So these are Muslims that are where? They're in.
From 25 different Muslim countries.
For 25 that are professing their Christian faith.
Yes, that they came and they said, "I want to accept Jesus as my Lord and Savior."
Okay, okay.
That I want to follow Jesus. Okay. That I believe in the message of the gospel.
So, study on these people and go ahead.
And we studied these people and to see what was about these people, these Muslims, that attracted them to come and profess Christian faith, because in Islam, that's apostasy.
Yes.
And that's subjected to death penalty in Islamic law. And so they're taking huge risks, especially in Muslim countries, to profess Christian faith. And they said the number one reason was that they saw that genuine Christian love, that genuine Christian acceptance. They came across Christians who just went out there in the field and they just loved on Muslims. They just sat down and had ordinary dialogue with them. They were not afraid to talk about, you know, comparing biblical Jesus and Quranic Jesus. These are Christians who were not afraid to say, well, there are different accounts of Jesus in the Quran. Let's talk about it. Let's dialogue about it. Mm-hmm. And so they were not afraid to sit down and just help them out, go visit them in the hospitals or help their children or teach them or engage with them. So it was just a genuine, just ordinary human love that one can give another person.
Mm-hmm.
So you were very right on what you were saying, and maybe you want to share the message that you gave on Monday.
Well, I do every week, so the day you're here, the people have heard me talk about love and as the highest ideal. So these Muslims have come over to Christianity because of the message of love, and that seems to be the one message that we seldom hear in popular Christianity. Mm-hmm. By popular Christianity, these are people that, we hear it every day. The Christians are doing this, and they've politicized the Christian message.
Mm-hmm.
So we're all of a sudden grouped into a group of people that are intolerant, ununderstanding. We don't understand anything because we are Christian, and quite the opposite. Last week there was a march on science,
mm-hmm.
in I think something like 20-25 different cities, as well as here in Los Angeles, and they were primarily marching and saying science. Can you imagine this? People are getting up and saying you have to listen to science. Well, of course, yeah, like who wouldn't listen to that? Who wouldn't is basically there's a group of fundamentalists who want to believe that, I mean, it's absurd. It's seriously absurd to believe that the Earth is 6,000 years old,
mm-hmm.
you know? But
mm-hmm.
there's a group of people that do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, despite all the evidence, there's a group of people that will say, when you point to the dinosaurs, you point to the fossils, they'll say, well, God put those fossils there to confuse us. Confuse us about what? You know, I don't know what that is, but there are people that will argue this. Now, there is a truth to evolution. Whether you want to believe how it all started, there is a truth that people do evolve. We have evolved. We used to live mm-hmm. like 30 years. Now we live 60 years. That's an evolutionary. That's because of better medicines, better habits, and so on and so on. So there is an evolution that goes on, just even if you don't observe in a microscope, you observe in the way people live. So anyway, the point of this is that there's these marches and there's this discussion about we have to support science because the fundamental right, Christian right, has usurped that title of Christianity and has said that this is ours. No, Christianity is mine too. Christianity is to a broad group of people. When I look at people like in the Roman Catholic Church, from the saint, now sainted John Paul II, and how he brought about changes in the communist world. Wow, you know, mm-hmm. that's a Christian. That's somebody out of the church doing that kind of stuff. When I look at a Martin Luther King Jr. as a reverend, you know, using the gospel to inspire people. Mm-hmm. This is where our direction can go. These are not people that are saying science is wrong. They're saying that, yeah, okay, science is there, but I'm a man of faith. And so now we get into these big issues now in refugee situations and definitely what's going on in the world. And it's important for me to at least identify that it's okay to do these things. Not only okay.
It's a must.
It's a must.
It's a duty.
So much so that if you don't do it, I don't think you have the right to be called a faith community. And I've been out on a limb. I've said it many times. I left a church in Glendale where they didn't want to do. Can you imagine? We set up programs to help the poor. They told me, no, this is not something we need to do at this point. Well, then you no longer are a church because Jesus Christ said, you are my body, right? So at that point, you need to say, this is not the body of Christ. And as Christ suggests, not suggest, he tells us, wipe the dust off of your feet and go on, move forward. That's in line with what Greg had told you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Don't
yes.
look back, just move forward. So I've talked too long because I wanted to hear you, but tell me about...
I'm going to tell you then what my husband and I on that morning, April 24th again, we were talking, right? So we continued. And I love some of his perspectives because he has this great pastoral perspective that is realistic.
Yes.
Because we have to understand one reality, that faith, just like culture and law, is not static. It changes, it evolves, it grows. Culture changes, laws change, adapt to the new culture, new society. And our faith has to evolve. And I'm not saying that our faith in Christ or in the message of cross changes, but our faith as Christian faith, it has to be realistic to the time, the society, the circumstances of our global community, of our environment around us. Our faith has to be applicable. It cannot live, you know, hundreds of years ago. It has to apply to today, to now, and to the future. Faith has to always have a vision, has to be futuristic. And it's very easy, again, for one to sit and to put faith. One of the things that I had prepared for Monday, which I didn't do because I didn't want to have too many visuals, I had put this Armenian church into a bunch of bubbles. I'd wrap bubbles around it. And I was going to open it and unwrap it. And I had brought a flashlight with me. So when I unwrap it, then I turn on the flashlight and hold it behind that church and to give a message that God calls us, just like my mama told me long time ago, get your church and your faith out of your bubble. Don't hide behind this bubble. Don't wrap yourself inside a bubble and just pretend you're Christian and be happy with your Christian faith and be comfortable and just go to church on Sundays or just show up once in a while on an Easter, dress nicely and go to church, or on Christmas, go light a candle. Get out of your bubble, Yvette. There's a world out there that needs you. You need your faith. There's a neighbor next to you that needs you. So I was going to take that church and unwrap it and show and say, this is it. God is saying, I want my Armenian church out of the bubble. And it says that I want my church. What did Jesus say? That be the man that creates, holds, puts his house on top of a mountain and shines its light so others can find their way when they're lost. And I was going to hold a flashlight behind the church and say, where is your light, Armenian church? Where is it? Let your light shine and burst into the world, man.
I wish you had, because first of all, we needed to hear that. Second of all, I was wondering throughout the whole evening, like, what is that bubble wrap doing there? So now you've given the answer to that too.
Maybe we'll do it next Monday.
Just for our listeners, just so you understand, we're talking about what happened last Monday on April 24th. Yvette was the homilist at a service that we did in Glendale. So that's in reference to that. And definitely, you could feel her passion in just talking. I believe Susie has a video of your sermon. We'll try to get that up on our website and share it with our listeners as well. So Yvette, let's talk about the application of the gospel message, because that's what you're really talking about. When you're talking about this, you're talking about not being a arm sleeve, what do they call it, arm sleeve Christian, where you just wear it on your, you wear a cross around your neck. Mm-hmm. Let's call it a necklace Christian. Mm-hmm. Armenians do this, okay? Or I call it the rear view mirror Christian, where you put a chach on your rear view mirror, or the pillow Christian, where you put a Bible under your pillow, right? Okay. What is the gospel message, and how do you apply that?
And all of that is good. At least we'll do something,
at
right?
At least you're doing something. Yes. I don't know.
Because all of that, in some sense, is good.
I would argue it because it gives us a false sense of reality and a false...
But, you know, for those who are doing it, I don't want them to feel bad about doing it. Well, but here is the thing.
Yes.
But here is the thing. This is the message we want to tell all of us. Me, Father Vazgen, and everyone. All of us. The message of the cross is extremely difficult. The message of the gospel, the good news, is very, very difficult because it's a message of action.
Uh-huh.
Look at Jesus. You know, when I was at Fuller Seminary, I wrote a paper on political Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
I called Jesus a man of revolutionary. Mm-hmm. He wasn't the ordinary man. A lot of people like to put Jesus in this box of he was so tame. He was meek. He was humble. He was all of that. Don't take me wrong. But this was not a very quiet man.
No.
In 3 years, he created a new religion. He changed a political system. He changed a society. He mobilized people. He was able to bring a group of disciples who were so faithful to him. Imagine, these disciples were so faithful and so immersed in that faith that he had shared with them, in the message that he had shared with them. They believed it so much that even when he went to the cross and he died, although their faith was shaken for a while, but they did not lose faith. And they continued, and it's been continuing for over 2,000 years. This was not an ordinary man. Following Jesus' footsteps, like, you know, we showed in that image of you know, your ministry that is called In His Shoes, and this message that you're giving called The Next Step, and we showed that visionary of bringing those shoes and, you know, following the path of our ancestors who died for their faith and following the path of Christ or the message of cross. This is not an easy thing to do. This calls for action. This calls for mobilization of faith. This calls for me to get up and say, Yvette, you cannot be an ordinary human being. I have told God I refuse to die without going into history books. Why? Not because I want to have this prideful name behind me, because I want to leave a legacy behind.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be a Mother Teresa. I want to be, you know, make history like Mesrop Mashtots or, you know, Paul in the Bible. You know, I want to, you know, make history like our ancestors of faith.
Mm-hmm.
And the message of cross is very difficult because God calls us and says, what did Jesus say? Oh, go away from me when I do not know you, because when I was hungry, you did not come to feed me. When I was sick, you did not come to visit me. When I was lost, you did not come to find me. Jesus says that look around your life, look around, get out of your bubble, get out of your comfort zone. Don't march one day a year, march every day.
Yes.
Every day. And just make this message and this, you know, your faith applicable to today.
Absolutely. And that's the challenge I think we have as Christians. How to stay Christian, not on Christmas and Easter, but the rest of the year. The day after Easter, the day after Christmas, you know. If we have a saying over here that it's not about, because Armenians have a big, big issue with January 6th and December 25th. And what I've been teaching is, you know, forget about those dates, you know.
It's every day.
Be a Christian today. What is today?
It's every day.
In April and in May, you know.
Those are every day.
Yeah.
On April 24th, can I tell you how I commemorated?
Tell me about your commemoration and tell me in preparation. I think you had a very special story in preparation for your homily. But tell me how you commemorated.
Yes. So I went into a season, I always pray that, you know, Lord, what is your message that you want me to give? Because it's not about me. It's about what is on your heart. What is beating? Where is your heart beating today? Which part of that beat do you want me to share? And so I always pray and I say, you know, whatever that I say, I want you to speak through my mouth. My mouth is yours. It's not mine. And so I woke up 3:00 in the morning. Normally this happens to me often as a writer. And I had the message. I start writing. I keep a notebook next to my bed, especially on critical days when I have to speak, because I know that my God will wake me up at some point. And so I woke up. It's like, Yvette, here's your message. And so I got up in the morning, and I was kind of, as an Armenian, I was kind of feeling guilty. Well, should I go to the march? Should I not go to the march? Should I be part of this? What if I don't go to the march? And Armenians say, well, she is such a hypocrite. You know, she's speaking on the Armenian Genocide Commemoration Day, and then she wasn't part of the march. And I felt this quietness within my spirit that, you know, after especially I talked with my husband, I felt that, you know, there's so much always to do, and there is a sense of quietness that sometimes is necessary. So I said, okay, well, I am going to do what the Lord told Joshua to do. Before they go into the promised land, God told Joshua, who took over Moses' mission to take Israelites into the promised land from wilderness, and he said, take your men, take your trumpets, take all your musical instruments, and go to Jericho. And I want you to march around Jericho 7 times, pray and sing, and let your musical instruments play, and pray over it before you enter the promised land. I say, you know, Lord, I'm going to do that. I'm going to conquer my Jericho.
Did you
which
to,
is
it? Oh, okay. I did. Your Jericho. Okay.
My Jericho. Okay. My Jericho of that church message on that eve. So I drove to the church, and I went and walked around 7 times and prayed. I prayed, and I said, Lord, you know, my feet are your feet. I'm walking the footsteps, your footsteps. Mm-hmm. And I just want to bring blessings and just say that, Lord, I want your presence in this place. I want you to send Michael and his angels down. I want you to just send your Holy Spirit. Just cover this place with the blood of Jesus. And just let your spirit fill this church. That, and I went and prayed over every seat. And I said, Lord, anyone who sits here, I want them to be moved by your spirit. I want them to be moved by your message. I want them to hear your heart. I want them to feel your heartbeats. And don't let them go without hearing the message of cross. And just impacting them. And so that's how I commemorated my April 24th. And that was my march for the day. So
a very nice march. Yeah, that's Your conversation with your husband sounds like the ones we have with my wife. We April 24th or any of these big things. There's this guilt that we all feel. You know, if mm-hmm. we don't do what the mass of people do,
yeah.
and then. It's good when you find somebody who could tell you, no, you're doing the right thing. You know, do the right thing. Don't go with the big flow yeah. of people. We were at the April 24th event at the Armenian Monument. And I have to tell you, honestly, I spoke about this too. It's just, I feel like the blood of the martyrs was uneasy that day. You know, we've politicized it. They've become a token piece in this bigger political game, you know, mm-hmm. of what Armenians can get, instead of recognizing and appreciating yeah. a life that they gave.
Yeah, I mean, on Monday, how did we start our message? We talked about Armenian identity of our ancestors. And so we identified it, you know, in five different ways. And we talked about it, that the major identity about them was their fate, right? And that message of cross, it was, you know, how they were men and women of, you know, Christian faith and vision, Christian vision. And so, you know, those are kind of things that, you know, we talked about, that that's why they were able to endure all that, you know, atrocities and go through it, because they upheld that message of faith.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. We, you know, it's so easy to be part of a huge mess, and you know, like a group.
Yes.
I don't go to marches. I don't go to anywhere that people protest. I don't believe in that. First of all, I'm a person who really loves national security, so I'm advocate of national security, so I do not like protests at all. My protest is that I have to do something. When I started going to Germany to help out, do you know that I lost a lot of my Jewish scholar friends?
Really?
Yes. Yes. They got very angry with me. As a scholar, you know, we have our own community, right, of other scholars. And a lot of Jews, they got angry. I had this one Jewish friend who said, I don't understand your mentality. What is this about Germany? You always go to Germany. And what is this about going to Germany and, you know, working with refugees? This is nonsense. They're a bunch of Nazis. And I'm not saying every Jew is like that. I'm just saying that a group of mine.
A group that you, yes.
And, you know, it's very difficult to do the right thing when there is a lot of adversity. And, you know, we're always afraid of losing friends, losing support, losing those who we know. For example, one of the things that I started doing after I went to Fuller Seminary was interfaith dialogue. I brought Muslims and Christians together,
mm-hmm.
Going to the Islamic centers, talk about Christianity and bring Christians, bringing Muslims into the church and talking about Quranic Jesus and put them in dialogue. Do you know that I lost some of my Christian evangelical pastor friends?
Yeah, I can imagine.
I had one of them who actually said that I have literally brought Satan into my house.
Ooh.
Yes. Because I read the Quran 3 times. I've studied it. And he said, you have brought Satan into your soul, into your being, into your spirit, into your house, and your house is cursed. And I refuse to socialize with you. And, you know, this is not the Christian faith. My husband reminded me, he said, what did Jesus say? Go and love Gentiles, right?
Well, I was going to say, it's certainly not what Jesus would do, right? I mean, didn't he sit with the Samaritan? And didn't he? Samaritans were basically yes. the outcasts of that time, you know. And he actually... I have a good friend of my son. She's studying nursing, and she came home yesterday, and she was given a problem in her nursing school. What was unique about Jesus curing the leper? Imagine mm-hmm. this in nursing mm-hmm. school. And we read the story. Well, what is unique about it? Leprosy, They used to put them in colonies mm-hmm. because it was so horrible, yeah. disgusting. Their skin would fall off of their body and everything. What was unique about that story about leprosy, Jesus didn't say, you are healed. He went and he touched them.
Mm-hmm.
He touched the lepers.
Yes.
Unheard of.
Yes.
He went right there and he could have said, he could have stood off 50 feet away and said, okay, you're cured. Leave me alone. But he went and he hugged them, he kissed them, he touched mm-hmm. them, and then he cured them. It's like we've got to start understanding that our only salvation is when we start embracing one another yeah. as people of this planet,
yeah,
people, human beings.
You know? And, you know, just a reminder for all of us is that, you know, one thing that I always say, we all have the same mission, right? We all have the mission of the cross. But we all have different visions, and we need to separate them out, right? Our mission is the message of the gospel, what Christ told us, to go and love others, to love one another, to embrace one another, right? But we have, God gives us different visions. That means He equips us differently. We're all equipped for different field work. I'm not the type of a person, honestly, to be able to go to hospitals and visit the sick.
Mm-hmm.
I've done that, and that is very difficult for me. Why? I don't know. But it's, for me, it's very easy to be in, to work with refugees or to go love a homeless or someone like that. And then if they're sick, then I can, you
sure.
know, love on them,
sure.
but walk into a hospital is not my thing.
Right.
So everybody is equipped in different ways. And it's the most important thing is that we remember we all have a mission that is unified. But we need to ask God, what is your vision for my life? What do you want me to do? And so where is my unique gift? Where is my unique field? Where should I go? What should I do? Maybe he's working with, children in need, or maybe it's work with, women who've been sexually harassed, or, you know, maybe men who are addicted, you know, to some kind of a drug or go into prison, or, you know, bring food to the elderly. I don't know. Everybody has a different vision and different calling. And that's the important part that we need to identify, but we should never lose the sight of the ultimate mission.
Well, that's where I think I have a problem. It's like, yes, we all have different visions, but if that mission is not part of that vision,
yeah.
then
it's,
to me,
it's
and that outreach, okay, well, yes, I agree with you. There's certain things we cannot do. For instance, prison ministries or hospital visits, as you said, refugees, okay?
Yes.
But outreach, that
yes.
component of outreach,
mm-hmm.
helping the least of my brothers and sisters,
yes.
has to be in the message.
Yes.
Otherwise, it's no longer Christian. It's just,
exactly.
You're a nice
and
person.
And that's the mission.
Even if you are.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I want to read this poem.
Please
Can
do.
I?
Please do. I think it'd be nice.
My very wonderful part German pastor, former military husband, reminded me of this poem. It's by a German Protestant Lutheran pastor of late 19th century. His name is Martin Niemöller. And he was very outspoken against Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually spent the last 7 years of Nazi rule in concentration camps. This poem that he wrote, First They Came, is, to really show the cowardice of the German intellectuals back then during Nazi rise and power, and that, you know, how Hitler started targeting group after group. And the poem deals with the themes of persecution, guilt, and responsibility. So here is what the poem says. First they came for the socialist, and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionist, and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out, because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me. And my husband reminded me, and he said, this is the message of April 24th. Mm-hmm. It's about human rights. It's about humanity. He says, this is the message of what you're doing with the refugee work. Because if people like Yvette, Father Wazgen, X, Y, and Z do not stand up and do something about it and bring attention to this humanitarian crisis or any crisis around us, or to not attend to our civic duties in our communities, then someday someone will rise up and come up with a policy or do something that will target our own lives. And then who's going to come and help us? So it's important that we be engaged, and it's important that we attend to our duties as ambassadors of our faith and ambassadors of our state, of our country, on both levels, political and religious.
Very well said. I could take one and leave the other, but this is your this is your interview, and very well said. Thank you. I want to thank you for making the time and sharing your thoughts with us today. And I look forward to all the good work we're going to be doing. Actually, you're heading out to Germany next month, right?
May 15.
And God be with you. Are you going to be in our prayers, in a constant prayer? Thank you. And I hope we'll catch up with you in Armenia or somewhere along the way. And I know our paths are going to cross.
And maybe Turkey borders.
Why not?
Yes.
Okay, there's all kinds of things.
Yes.
We're going to leave it in God's hands, and I know He always makes the right decision. Anyway, thank you. It's always a pleasure. God bless you. And give you strength and courage to do the work that's necessary.
Amen. Thank you.
Susie here again. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. We are now in the ninth year of producing shows which are heard around the globe. Since 2008, we've provided quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Wazgen calls it, Armadoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. Please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Thanks for listening, and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Wazgen.
Well, thank you, Susie, for that announcement. Thank you, Yvette, for the interview. And thank you, all of you, for your prayers, your thoughtfulness, your kind words. They go a long way in keeping this ministry going. I want to do a little bit of a shout-out to a couple people, because it's a week of transitions. A very dear friend of mine, and one that I've had the privilege, really privilege and honor, to serve with this past 20 years, and that is a deacon of the Armenian Church, Dr. Hadar Dekmejan, professor over at USC Political Science. They celebrated his tenure at USC. I can't call it a retirement. No, he's not the retiring type, but he's certainly somebody who has inspired a lot of people, including myself. And it was just great to be at USC again and to share in some reflections. People reflected about his life, his career. He was the one that 20 years ago invited me to be the chaplain for the Armenian Student Association there. And we've had a chance to work together for the last 20 years, including a very monumental program that we put together in Glendale in doing the Youth Ministry Center. And that is always, I will always go on the record as saying that it was a co-venture between himself and myself, and working together in putting that together. So a big shout out to him and his family for good health and God's blessings always. And also for our dear friends over at Predator Cycling. Yes, you remember that name. Sponsors of this program, our dear friends Autumn and Courtney, heading out to Tennessee to begin a business and life out there. And we wish God's blessings and Godspeed with them. And if you're into carbon fiber bicycles, lightweight, we were over their place the other day, and they had a bicycle there. You could pick it up with your pinky. Anyway, just amazing technology, and he's right at the forefront. Predator Cycling, don't forget that. And we wish him and Courtney all the best as they begin their life anew over there. And with that, let me see. We've got a couple of announcements. Next week, I'm going to be sharing some wild stuff about what's going on inside of the church in a way that you probably have never really thought about. So let me just throw that out at you. We had the we had that celebration of cultures between the Armenians and the Lakota, the Native Americans. We're going to be sharing some thoughts and reflections about that in a post-event follow-up to that. We've got all kinds of stuff we'll be talking. So don't miss us, okay? Let's leave it at that. Listen, I want to take this opportunity to thank you for joining us and being with us today. I know we went a little bit late, but I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you again to our dear guest, Dr. Yvette Hovsepian-Bierce. She's going to be traveling to Germany in a couple of weeks. We wish her Godspeed as she does her ministry over there. And we will stay in touch. We will Skype. We will have interviews. We'll have means of communication one way or another and keep you updated on what she is doing. I want to thank you for joining us. On behalf of the wonderful staff who put today's show together, Susie, our producer, Ken, our engineer, this is Father Ruskin, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of VPostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Take your breath. Cut out!